And now it's time for On Our Minds. In Texas, a legal battle is raging over the status of the state's abortion clinics. Nearly half of them closed earlier this year after a new state law went into effect. The Supreme Court recently weighed in and granted a few of them a little wiggle room. But for many women in Texas right now, the only way to get an abortion is to drive 500 or 600 miles. Katha Pollitt is a columnist for The Nation and a pro-choice advocate who believes it's time to reframe the whole abortion debate. In her new book, Pro, she points out that an American woman today may have a legal right to an abortion, but that doesn't mean she can get one.
Well, the U.S. is a big country, and it depends entirely on where she lives. For example, in New York, where I live, there are plenty of clinics. There's Medicaid, state Medicaid abortion, because as you probably know, federal funds cannot be used. However, if our hypothetical woman lives in North Dakota or Missouri or South Dakota or Wyoming or Mississippi or in large parts of Texas, she's really in trouble because the states I mentioned by name have only one clinic each, or in the case of Wyoming, they don't even have a clinic. And there's, you know, they're heaping up restrictions, as you know, dragging out the waiting periods. Missouri just passed one, 72 hours. So it's got one clinic in St. Louis. If you live anywhere, and it's a big state, you have to come to St. Louis. You have to live there for 3 days till it's legally permissible for you to have your abortion. That raises the cost and the stress and the difficulty of obtaining an abortion tremendously.
So you're saying that practically, in many places in the U.S., it's as though Roe v. Wade had never passed.
Well, almost, especially for women who don't have a lot of money.
I wanted to make sure we talked a little bit about the history of the criminalization of abortion, because one of the things that you wrote about in the book, which I guess I hadn't really known, I would guess a lot of women are not that familiar with, is that the numbers of abortions conducted in this country have not necessarily changed dramatically pre- and post-criminalization.
In the late 50s, Mary Steichen Calderon, who was then the medical director of Planned Parenthood, convened a lot of experts to figure out how many illegal abortions there were at that time. And the most common number people came up with was around 1 million. Well, when you consider how much smaller the population was in the mid-1950s compared to today, it really is. If that's true, that's amazing to think that there really were almost as many abortions in that much smaller population at a time, you know, this was before feminism, too.
Did abortion carry the same stigma then that it does today?
Well, you know, that's such an interesting question because I think it is worse now. Now that it's legal, people can concentrate on condemning women who have them. When it was secret, you really didn't know who was having them. And, you know, you're certainly right. Abortion has different meanings at different times in history. Abortion was legal in the United States, in most states, until after the Civil War. That means abortion was legal when we fought the American Revolution, when the Founding Fathers wrote the Constitution.
Did people have abortions then? Did they even know how?
Yes, they did. They had abortions using herbs, which were
abortifacients.
Don't do that. And they also had surgical abortions, which were quite dangerous. There were, in the early 19th century, there were something like 200 abortionists practicing in New York City. It was very, very common.
And legal.
If the Founding Fathers had wanted to say, oh, this is terrible, we want to put the right to life of the unborn in the Constitution, they could have done that, but they didn't. Abortion became illegal when it became associated with women getting a little more freedom and with the attempt of doctors to marginalize midwives and lay practitioners in order to codify their own professional status. It was a sort of complicated picture. But for half of our history, abortion has been legal.
Well, you begin the book, actually, by noting that you discovered not that long ago that your own mother had had an abortion.
My mother had an abortion. My great-grandmother had an abortion back in, you know, Belarusia. She had 9 children in an abortion. Most women who have abortions already have children. You know, so it's not the stereotype that, oh, here we have this giddy teenager, or here we have this cold-hearted, child-hating career woman. These are completely false. Your typical woman who's having an abortion is a mother.
What changes if you say the majority of women who have abortions either are mothers or are going to be mothers later?
Well, one thing you can't say is, oh, we need to make them look at an ultrasound so they'll know it's not a cantaloupe growing in there. You know, they've already seen ultrasounds. They've already been through childbirth. They know all about it. And I think that if you conceptualize it a little differently as a part of the whole reproductive life of women, a normal part, one in three women have abortions, at least one abortion during their life.
One in three, really?
Yes. Well, it's 3 in 10, but, you know, 1 in 3 is pretty close. If you conceive of it that way, then I think the picture does change a little bit.
If people have said that the whole abortion debate changed dramatically when ultrasounds became more routine. I mean, that was true for me. I remember having an amniocentesis around 6 weeks or whenever you do to screen for birth defects. And seeing that first ultrasound image of, you know, head and arms and hands, I do remember thinking that if some genetic anomaly showed up, my decision had just gotten a lot more complicated, more painful.
I think it is painful for a lot of women, women who have wanted pregnancies and then they find out that there's something wrong. I think that's extremely painful. I think you're right that ultrasound has made people think a little differently about the status of the embryo or the fetus, but I don't think it has made them necessarily feel different about what the law should be and what access should be for women who want to have abortions.
You also remark in your book that those ultrasounds turn women into, what do you call this, gray and white wallpaper, which is such an interesting comment.
Well, yeah, because, you know, you can only see the fetus by erasing the woman. You turn her into the background.
It's interesting you said that abortion was secret for so long and still is. And I think earlier you mentioned the numbers are something like 1 in 3 or 3 out of every 10 women supposedly has had an abortion. And yet I would guess many women listening may feel that they don't know anybody who's ever had an abortion. Is that starting to change? Aren't we starting to see some younger women, pro-choice advocates, starting to create very much more public campaigns to say, you know, I had an abortion?
Yes. You know, this goes back in 1970. One of the first issues of Ms. Magazine had a statement, I've had an abortion, that was signed by many famous women like Nora Ephron and Lillian Hellman and Billie Jean King. But then that kind of public statement went away, and you mostly heard from women who had abortions that they really didn't want, that they had abortions because there was something catastrophic going on with the fetus or with themselves, or they were rape victims. They were sort of the whole good abortion, bad abortion thing. You didn't have so many people saying, yeah, I had an abortion because I got pregnant by my boyfriend and we're not together and I don't want to have a baby on my own, or I was too young, or I wanted to finish medical school. But now we're seeing that change with the youngest cohort of activists, the women who are around 30, are much more outspoken and creative than we've seen in activism for quite some time.
Katha Pollitt is a columnist for The Nation and author of Pro, Reclaiming Abortion Rights. That's what's on our minds today, but we post new On Our Minds segments on our website every day, and you'll find them at ttbook.org.